The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. Hey, I just thought of something. What if Eric was a cow? His name would have to be Eric Metaxas, right? And he's probably written a biography about Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Oh, what's the matter? You got a beef with my sense of humor? Oh, I suppose you find it utterly ridiculous. Okay, I guess I'm really milking it now. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Mr. Metaxas.
Wow. You know, I know Todd didn't write that, but I think he probably should be fired anyway.
Probably.
You know, it's kind of like the Nuremberg trials where they said, well, yeah. You know, yeah, you were told to do this, but by doing it, at some point you needed to speak up. And Todd didn't speak up. I think he's guilty.
Start the new year with a new cast, so to speak.
He needs to be hanged.
Get somebody else.
For having talked about that. Hey, folks, yeah. Happy New Year. Since we haven't really been back. My goodness, Albin.
Yes, sir.
My, how you've grown.
Yes. Yes,
you were just
a little stripling, a little boy
carrying a sled 5 minutes ago, and now you're a man.
I'm a man.
It's incredible. We have a lot to talk about. First of all, we want to warn everybody. Mm-hmm. In a few minutes, the great, big, bad John Zmirak will be on the phone from Dallas, Texas. He is a flame-throwing monster, and we love him. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have Zmirak to talk about current events, Iran, the president, on and on and on and on. But before we bring John into the loop, Albin.
Yes, sir.
Man.
I know.
A lot has happened.
I know. We haven't even talked enough to each other. We were walking up the steps together, and that's about it.
And I know. That's when I found out you were married. What is going on?
Yeah, thank you.
It's incredible.
Belatedly. Yes.
Marriage looks good on you.
Seriously, now,
we've got a couple things to cover before Zmirak. So real quick, the Christmas special, right? A lot of people had no idea the Christmas special was even out there, right? Because maybe they don't watch TBN. So we tried to get them to view it. Basically, we just put it on YouTube. So even if it's too complicated for you to find, just go to our Eric Metaxas Show YouTube channel. We would love to get your comments. We really would love to get your comments, good and bad. Just be gracious.
Yes.
I posted pieces of it on Twitter. The most people liked the Greek character, like more than anything else. And I thought that's the one thing that I absolutely did not want to do. Now, people think I'm making that up. I'm not. I didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
And
it was like the last thing that was shot.
It was the last thing that was shot.
Yeah.
And I.
Yeah, we'll stick it in here somewhere.
But I think if you have Greek friends, folks, you've got to send them that clip because there's nobody doing Greek humor. You know what I mean?
Not much.
It's like we got 10,000 Joe Pesci's. We got Jewish humor. But the Greek thing, it's not so well known. And there's a lot of Greeks out there that they will understand it. But anyway, so the Christmas special, I can't say anything except I can't believe that it happened, that so many people got to see it, and that people are still watching it. Obviously, you can tell from the YouTube views and stuff.
Well, and today is the Feast of the Epiphany, so it's a good day to watch it again.
So today's like the last day of Christmas officially.
Something like that, yeah.
Okay, and also the code, the MyPillow code for the show is New York.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever we say on the show about 66% off or whatever, if you use New York for that show. Now, for this radio show, as you know, the MyPillow code is Eric. Any other codes pretty much go into the hands of George Soros.
Yes.
And you need to know that. When you see something on Fox News, do not be fooled, folks. The code Eric or New York, those are the only ones you want to use. I'm just telling you straight up. Okay. So now, Albin, we got a couple of other things. I can't forget to mention that no more Christmas music.
Okay,
we're done with Christmas music. But I was asked last week by the Wall Street Journal to write a piece on evangelicals and Trump, kind of as a response to the Christianity Today editorial by Mark Galley, which called for the removal of the president. Most people would know that I don't agree with that. It's a complicated situation. It's an interesting situation. And I did think it needed to be addressed. A number of people have addressed it very well. But the Wall Street Journal asked me to address it. And I believe sometime this week we'll let you know. It will appear and we will tell you. But I feel, you know, honored that they asked me to write on what really is a very important subject. So I'm excited about that. Later this week, I'm going to be leaving you.
Aww.
And where I go, you cannot come.
Aww.
Yes, I'm going duck hunting in Louisiana with the Duck Dynasty people, and I'm forcing my daughter
wow.
to come with me.
Whoa.
Most people say, Eric, you get the Father of the Year award. My daughter's not one of them. She doesn't. She heard that we have to like be ready to go in the parking lot at 4:15 a.m. That to me is like a deal breaker. For her, it's like I'd rather die. But God will provide us, you know, yeah. what we need, the energy to do that. So we're looking forward to that. And then I want to mention that this past weekend, Suzanne and I went down to Miami for the launch of the Evangelicals for Trump Coalition.
Hmm.
It was one of the most extraordinary experiences. We are in the largest Hispanic church in the United States of America in Miami.
Yeah.
The pastor there, they call him the Apostle Maldonado. I mean, it's a very brave thing for a pastor to open up his church sanctuary for what's effectively a political rally.
Yeah.
I think he was right to do it. But you can see that people get a lot of criticism for that. But the event was just so wonderful. Sissy Graham Lynch, the granddaughter of Billy Graham, spoke beautifully. A number of people spoke so beautifully. And, of course, the president is always a howling entertainer. Like, yeah. I cannot get over the stuff yeah. that he says on the – but that was really, really extraordinary. And then more recently, Suzanne and I were down in D.C. because TBN
– Yes.
has created a documentary series called Inexplicable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about the history of the Christian church, obviously from, you know, the beginning, Jesus, to the present. And the narrator is Dennis Haysbert.
I know. When I heard that, I said, wow, the president in 24,
right?
For those of you
that,
keeping
right?
score.
And the voice of Allstate.
That's right.
He was at the Museum of the Bible with us for this event. And he's a wonderful person. I got time to talk to him. He, unfortunately, though, and I'm not trying to be mean, but he's just too tall. You know, when you're my size
like
and somebody's
yeah.
that tall,
looks
that's
like
not acceptable.
Guy.
Please.
Yeah,
it's
please.
Not acceptable. But what a wonderful guy. And Inexplicable is going to be airing on TBN like any day, like next week, I think it airs the first episode. And then every like 40 days, there's another episode.
Wow,
so
that's
there's
great.
But
that's
I got to tell you, it is. Yeah, you'll see.
To
anyway.
Get Dennis Haysbert, I mean, that guy, to me, he's just incredible.
Well, yeah. Okay, now, before we go to John Zmirak,
mm-hmm.
real quick, we need to mention, I mean, you want to talk about good news.
Yes.
By the way, if you don't get my weekly email, folks, I don't know what to tell you, because everything is in that email, okay? So you go to ericmetaxas.com, sign up for that, please. I mean, seriously, I'm begging you, because there's stuff we can never cover on this program. I'd rather be talking to John Zmirak than giving you this information, but... Christian Solidarity International, the whole idea was every $250 we raise from you, folks, you, was to free a slave. And we were able to free, thanks to you, you know who you are,
mm-hmm.
nearly 1,000
That's right.
human beings
yeah.
who are in actual slavery. Our brains boggle to think that this is not some metaphor, this is actually true. 1,000 we raised nearly $250,000. Now, CSI was so happy that, you know what they said?
What?
Would you do it again? And so what we decided to do, now this is a brand new campaign
right.
because we don't want to, you know, all the people that gave, we put your names in a hat for the grand prizes and all that kind of stuff. So that's done. Okay.
Yes,
so we're not going to. What do you call it? It's kind of like diluting the investment.
Yeah,
we're not going to do that.
It's in a lockbox. Remember
it's
that? The lock.
It's in a lockbox.
Yeah.
It's in a lockbox in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
But the point is that anybody who gave, you are entered in this drawing, and we are going to soon announce the winners of that drawing. But I want to tell you, if you didn't yet give or you want to give again, but most of you didn't give, obviously, and I want to say to you again and again, it doesn't matter what you give, anything that you give. You go to MetaxasTalk.com, or here's the phone number. It is... I can't read this.
888.
888. Okay. Now, this number, there was a big problem, so I'm going to say this real quick. But a lot of people tried to call, and I think we were giving out the wrong number, so who knows. But the number is 888-253-3522. We're going to repeat that all through the next 2 hours with John Zmirak. 888-253-3522. Thrilled for those of you who gave, and thrilled for those of you who are yet to give. This is God's work. We'll be right back.
And your heart have held me safe from a rolling sea. There's always been a quiet place.
Hey there, folks. That's Foreigner, and that is what's called quality tunage.
It is.
That is some quality tunage right there. And speaking of quality, we have a guest on right now. Ooh. I like to call him John Zmirak.
Yay!
And the good news is his name is actually John Zmirak, Z-M-I-R-A-K. John Zmirak, Happy New Year.
Big bad John.
Happy New Year, Eric. How you doing?
Well, I'm doing swell. Let me tell you something. Over the holidays, as we call them, I posted on Twitter and on Facebook links to the YouTube Eric Metaxas Show YouTube channel, and I asked people, you know, what were your favorite guests in the past year? And your name came up so often, I was embarrassed for you.
Wow.
It was like the guy who takes all the trophies, and you're like, you know what? He should refuse at least two of them because this is embarrassing. Other people worked so hard. Shame on you, John Zmirak. So many people didn't know, but it really was so wonderful. And so we're thrilled to have you today for both hours.
Well,
and
I've got to come back to New York to do another video.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we're not exactly going to stop you, my friend. We'd prefer to have you in the studio,
yeah.
But, you know, we know you have your beagles and all that. But
You can bring them
and turn them loose.
That would be fun.
Actually, yeah.
We could put a camera on their collars, and you could have a split screen beagle cam.
Yeah.
The whole show could be from their point of view while they run around and we just talk over them.
We could have beagles and stereophonic sound.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So
remember quadraphonic records?
Yeah, of course. Of course. Yeah. Quadraphonic records.
I still have my 8 tracks, so.
Well, okay, so look, we've got a lot to talk about, and yeah. I'm happy to start anywhere, but I think probably because of this, the hot news with this strike of Soleimani in Iran, we ought to talk about that. So you wrote a piece for the stream about that, Alvin.
Can I just say something real quick? See, everybody was talking about New Year's resolutions. He thought they said New Year's revolution, and that's where he made his
Is
big mistake.
Is that right? Yeah. I never thought of that,
Poor
and
guy.
I will never think of that again.
He's been nominated posthumously, by the way, for a Nobel Peace Prize.
This is one of these things that it's rare that, because people have been focusing on this president and the impeachment and all this nonsense, it's kind of rare that we have actual news. So tell us, John, what are your thoughts? You wrote a piece at the stream. Bring it to us.
Yeah, well, the title kind of sums it up. Careful, Mr. President. Stupid wars are how you get 8 years of Obama. All right. So basically, this attack on this Qasem Soleimani, Soleimani, I guess, is
yeah,
his last name.
Yeah.
This strike on this guy was completely justified, okay? Iran has been waging a low-level war against the United States for 20 or 30 years, and they've been upping it recently. They had mobs that they control attack our embassy in Baghdad. They've killed a military contractor. They're trying to control 5 or 6 foreign countries via their proxies, like Lebanon and Qatar and Iraq and Syria. And this guy, Soleimani, was in charge of this regional empire that Iran was trying to build via these guerrilla armies that engage in terrorist activity. And he was on Iraqi soil, where our troops are present at the request of the government. He was on Iraqi soil planning military strikes against Americans and American interests.
Emphasis on the word
target, I don't know what
was.
It is. Sorry?
Emphasis on the word was.
Right, right. So that is was a completely legitimate target morally and constitutionally.
Well, there's a lot to unpack, John. Let me ask you, first of all, I'm not the kind of person who can rejoice in anyone's death. I am glad that this guy is gone. I'm glad that the president did what he did. It was the right thing. There is no question in my mind about that. But let's get to some specifics. Why? I mean, because I know there are lots of people listening, and some people listening are way up on this stuff. They know all the details, and most of us don't. So let me ask you some basic questions. How is it that we free Iraq from a bloodthirsty dictator, and that after pouring more treasure and blood into that soil over the last, it seems like 1,000 years, it's been 15, 18, for all this, that we now have Iranian people on the ground in Baghdad? How is this possible?
Well, in fact, it was the obvious outcome. I was one of the people saying back in 2003, don't invade Iraq. Toppling a murderous dictator in the Middle East is like scooping some water out of the ocean. It just makes room for more water. You're not going to get a liberal democracy in Iraq for the first time in its entire history. You know, it never existed there before. We Americans, with our can-do attitude, we think, what, golly gee, we can do it. We can use my dad's garage. We're gonna build a democracy in Iraq.
Right.
I've got some glue. I've got an airplane model kit. It was obviously never going to work. And sure enough, it didn't work. By dismantling the Sunni Muslim dictatorship of Saddam Hussein, by smashing that country, we made it the target of its next-door neighbor. It's kind of the way when you broke up, after World War One, when you broke up the Austro-Hungarian Empire, that whole empire ended up being controlled first by Hitler, then by Stalin. It created a vacuum. Iraq is majority Shiite Muslim. So think of the Shiites as the Catholics and the Sunnis as like the Protestants, all right?
Yeah.
Iran is the Shiite capital, all right? Their co-religionists, the Shiites, have felt oppressed for hundreds of years under the Sunnis. So the Iranians look like a messiah figure to some of the Shiites there, because they were finally going to be in control of their own country, and then they could persecute the Sunnis. It's never a question of we'll tolerate everybody and we'll just try to get along. That idea has never taken root in the Middle East. It's always a matter of, well, our religion wants freedom so that we can then repress everybody else, including other variants of Islam.
I guess, you know, I just, I always feel like I have to annotate. I don't understand how it's possible. I mean, this is so horrific to me that I don't even want to say this, but it seems like the Bush administration is guilty of a level of foreign policy incompetence that is staggering. In other words, I have no doubt that the Bush gang was better and more competent than the Kerry gang would have been or the Gore gang would have been. But the idea that the people that I trusted and voted for and told people to vote for had such a fundamental misunderstanding of things that they would give us this kind of endless war, that today, in 2020, we're dealing with a situation that seems genuinely worse than it was when we began. It's simply mind-boggling. Right. I just have to stop. I have to hit pause and say, I cannot believe that what we did there has given us a country where you have an Iranian terrorist monster on the ground in Baghdad. I could spend hours just, you know, freaking out.
Let's make it worse, Eric. He was the monster who defeated ISIS in Iraq. So he's the second worst monster, because ISIS was even worse. And this is the whole Pandora's box that George W. Bush goofily opened up. Hey, gee, what could go wrong? Golly gee, we're going to build a democracy. I mean, it really was a staggering act of hubris. It's stunning.
Well, I guess my question is, it always comes back to me, you know, to what I learned yesterday, right? Like, I mean, I finally figured out a few years ago when I wrote my book, If You Can Keep It, how self-government actually works. And so the naive idea, as you're saying, that you could go to a place like Iraq that has no history, it doesn't have the tools to govern itself. It's not ready to govern itself. It's like letting a beast out of a cage and saying it's going to start combing its hair and brushing its teeth. I mean, you have to spend time. It takes decades. But that level of naivete, John, is it not remarkable? Don't we have to figure out how it's possible that we could have that kind of naivete from the people that we're paying to know better?
Eric, I'll tell you exactly how it's possible. World War II. After World War II, we decided we're not going to let Germany and Japan just lapse back into another dictatorship. We're going to occupy the place for as many decades as it takes to re-educate them and remake them in our own image.
And it worked.
And we pretty much succeeded.
And it worked.
But we had bombed both places into cinders.
Okay, now listen, this always happens. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, just keep talking. Folks, we'll be right back with John Smirak. Talking to John Smirak, getting a wonderful history lesson. John, you were just explaining how we could get to a point where we could screw up as badly as we did in Iraq with the Bush administration.
And are doing now in Afghanistan.
And are doing in Afghanistan. And you're taking us back to what happened in
World War II.
So tell us again, educate us here.
All right. Here's the happy fantasy. People think back. They think, oh, wait, I went to Germany, you know, as a college student in college, and there's no Nazis anymore. It's nice and democratic. In fact, there are a bunch of wimps who are letting their country be overrun by millions of foreigners. I guess whatever we did worked. And look, Japan, you know, they make great movies. They make great technology. They don't worship the emperor anymore. Obviously, America fixed these countries. We can fix any other country in the world if we try hard enough. That is the extent of the sophistication of the neoconservative analysis of the Middle East, okay? We did it in Germany, we did it in Japan, we can do it in Iraq. Now, that is wrong on so many levels.
Well, but let's talk about those levels, because it's important that we understand this.
All right. Germany had an immensely popular elected dictator, Adolf Hitler, hugely popular. It rose to the apex of its power, it waged aggressive war on all its neighbors, and then it was utterly, completely, and absolutely obliterated. Most of its cities were bombed into rubble. Some of them were firebombed, as in Dresden. Hundreds of thousands of civilians died in our brutal but necessary air bombing of that country. And you know, I don't, very, like 20% or 30% of the men of military age were killed. The country was absolutely defeated, worse than the South after the Civil War. Then we came in amid the rubble. My father was there under General Patton guarding a coal dump from freezing German civilians with a rifle that didn't have a bullet in it because it was just designed to scare them. All right, we broke that country into pieces and then made a little mosaic out of the shattered ceramic fragments, all right? That's none of that was true in Iraq. Iraq had an unpopular government. It had not waged any successful wars. The people were not committed to the dictator. So when we removed the dictator, and we did not, thankfully, bomb the entire country like Dresden, it was totally unlike Germany. It wasn't like we worshipped this evil dictator as a god, and we thought he was going to conquer the world. You came in, you destroyed it, you destroyed everything else. We're living in rubble. You get to fix things. That wasn't the attitude in Iraq. In Iraq, it was, well, we had this horrible dictator. We didn't really like him. You took him out of power. All right, now get out of our country. In other words, we didn't fundamentally defeat Iraq as a nation, break it, grind it into powder, and then rebuild it from scratch.
Okay, and the reason we didn't do that is because we ought not to have done that. In other words, in the case of Germany, we were forced to do that. In the case of Japan, we were forced to do that. But in the case of Iraq, we went in without the necessary reason, according to you, and now I and many agree with what you presciently saw. I remember us having lunch and you just explaining this to me such a long time ago now. But you're saying we went in before we ought to have gone, and there was no need to go in, and we simply made the situation worse.
We should have gone in, killed Saddam Hussein with a SEAL team, and left and let them figure it out. But because of World War II, we made World War II our template for every war. Remember in Vietnam, Lyndon Johnson was promising a great society on the Mekong River.
Say that again, because I don't remember this. I know you don't remember it either, but because we were little kids. But you're telling me that Johnson, in the war in Vietnam, was claiming that we would do something similar in Vietnam, that we would remake...
He explicitly said, we're going to build a great society on the Mekong River. So that same huge social... He saw the war, the Vietnam War, as like a social program like the war on poverty. See, well, this is the kind of fantasy life, fantasy world that liberals and neoconservatives live in, that because you're good at chess, because you used to win at risk in the dorm at Yale, you are able to run the whole world and remake it from scratch based on a little formula that you came up with, and forget about thousands of years of history, forget about the independent wills of hundreds of millions of people. You got good SAT scores, you can fix it.
Well, let me ask you then, who understands these things? Obviously, you do. Now, thanks to you, I do, and people listening understand what you're saying. But who in public life over the last 20 years?
Rand Paul.
Okay, so Rand Paul does understand this.
I'd say Rand Paul is a good balance between interventionism and isolationism. He's not quite as out there as his dad, Ron Paul, whom I admire, but, you know, he is such a purist that I think he turns some people off. Rand Paul, I think, treads the line of being basically a realist. Jim Ansell at the American Conservative Magazine, which I was at the founding meeting with Pat Buchanan and Scott McConnell and Taki, where we had to figure out some alternative to National Review, because at the time, National Review was labeling anyone who was skeptical of invading Iraq as unpatriotic conservatives. That we are essentially traitors.
Oh, man. Okay, once again, I cut you off in the middle of a raging sentence. We'll be right back with John Zmirak. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. Folks, please don't go away, and please give to CSI. We've got a new campaign.
Mr. Milktoast.
Hey there, folks. This is Eric from Taxes Show. I'm talking to John Zmirak. John, you were just explaining to us at the founding of the American Conservative Magazine, a number of you were trying to figure out an alternative to National Review, which at that time was very pro-Iraq war, very neocon, basically. I'm not sure exactly where they are now or what Rich Lowry would say on this subject, but continue telling us about...
I'd say they're somewhat penitent, yeah. A little bit abashed,
yeah.
You know, and good for them. But at the time, you had David Frum back when he was playing a conservative on TV, and he was a speechwriter for George W. Bush. He wrote a piece for National Review where he called Pat Buchanan, Robert Novak, and every conservative critic of the Iraq War. He said they were unpatriotic, that they were rooting for their country's defeat because they warned, essentially, people like us, we wrote the script of everything that happened over the next 10 years. We predicted it all, and at the time for saying that. We were called defeatists. We were called pro-Islamists. Christopher Hitchens called me in print a ruthless anti-Semite for criticizing neoconservative foreign policy.
Hmm. I didn't know that. Wow, wow, wow. Well, again, I mean, I have
and
to go back.
You, in the article, I had not mentioned Jews or Israel or any of that. So it was just a complete smear.
Well, look, Christopher Hitchens was a nut. I mean, he said a lot of things that were just flat out not true. So we don't have to worry about what he says. But the point is that
how it worked. They smeared right. people and tried to professionally destroy them if we stood in the way of the rush to war. Remember the kind of crazy things we were being told. Condoleezza Rice said about Saddam Hussein's mythical weapons of mass destruction. She said on TV, "We don't want the smoking gun to be a mushroom cloud."
Yeah.
She was warning. She was trying to make people think that Hussein was developing nuclear weapons that would be used on New York and Washington.
Look,
D.C.
we have
it was
to be
all a lie.
Right. But well, I wouldn't say it was a lie. It was a mistake. Right. She really believed that. A lot of people really believed that.
She had been lied to. And there were people consciously lying to her and the Bush administration, which heard what it wanted to hear.
Right.
And selectively listened to the people who agreed with it and provided it with apparent intelligence that supported what they had already decided to do. Now, why is this relevant today? Okay? I think the killing of that Iranian butcher and terror master was perfectly legitimate. And I think individual airstrikes, economic sanctions, if President Trump is trying to contain Iran, which really is trying to build a regional empire that damages our interests and damages Israel and is dangerous for Christians in the region, he is trying to contain it. I worry that it will escalate, that this will turn out to be like an August 1914 situation where it's tit for tat. They do this, we do that, they do this, we do that, and it keeps escalating until the fantasy machine kicks in and people like Bill Kristol and Max Boot get on TV and tell us we can transform Iran into a glorious functioning democracy. We just have to march in there. The people will greet us with flowers and the country will just the invasion will pay for itself. All the same lies that they told us about the Iraq war, they will be telling us about Iran. And we have to not get caught in that quagmire for one simple reason. Trump will lose the election. If Trump gets us in a land war with Iran, he will lose the election. And that would be really, that's what I'm afraid of. I'm afraid of another 2008-style landslide for the Democrats. That's what gave us gay marriage and Obamacare and the IRS persecuting Tea Party groups and all those two appointees to the narrowly divided Supreme Court. Here's how I sum it up in my article. Otto von Bismarck once said, the whole of the Balkans weren't worth the bones of a single German soldier. The whole of the Middle East, Eric, is not worth one new Democratic appointee to the Supreme Court.
Now, say that again. The whole of the Middle East is not worth
Not worth Democrat appointee to the U.S. Supreme Court. One new, Ginsburg.
Right, which is what we will get. I want people to understand you
American.
Mean a Democrat appointee.
Yes.
That's what you mean.
One more Democrat appointee to the Supreme Court. The whole of it. If we fix the whole Middle East, none of it would be worth it if the Democrats win and put people on the court that will take away our gun rights, keep abortion legal forever, take away our religious freedom, open the borders so that every state like mine, Texas, gets flooded with millions of new Democrat voters, and Texas turns blue. We never have another pro-life, pro-Christian president again.
Well, we will never have America again. Let's cut to the chase. Who cares about anything else? We're talking about America here. It's not about Republicans or conservatives or Christians. It's about America as the founders gave her to us, as God gave her to us through the founders. That is what is effectively over, and we have an opportunity with this president to keep the republic and to shore up the republic. But we will lose that opportunity if this president loses. And you're quite right, John. If we get into a land war with Iran, he will lose.
War is so unpredictable. Nicholas II did not think when he defended Serbia in 1914, communists are going to take over this country, destroy all the churches, and murder my family. Hitler did not think when he invaded Poland, we're going to end up with the Russians, you know, occupying half of Europe and a strong independent state of Israel. And George Bush did not think, oh, this easy war in Iraq is going to lead to a Democrat landslide, that 8 years of a radical left-wing president, gay marriage, open borders, massive Muslim immigration and refugees. He wasn't thinking ahead. He was playing checkers, but the game is chess.
It's extraordinary to me that, you know, your understanding of this is so logical and clear and now backed up, unfortunately, by the last two decades of horrors in the Middle East. You know, I always wonder, John, now in hour two, by the way, we're gonna change the subject and we're going to talk about your predictions for 2020. Okay. I'm very excited to talk about your predictions for 2020. Some of them are scary. Some of them are funny. Yeah. But I want to talk to you about that. But before we go, we got 30 seconds. Why is it, John, that you've never thought yourself of getting involved in an administration? Why? Because it seems to me that they need your thinking.
I thought outside the box. There were not many people in 2003 who were against the Iraq war, but pro-life and for closed borders. I mean, I tried to get it. I was a Pat Buchanan delegate to the 1996
right.
Republican National
right.
Convention.
Well, look,
you know,
we're...
Pat Buchanan's movement was mine. It was ahead of its time.
Okay.
Trump has taken up that mantle.
Amen.
That's
exactly right. Okay, we're going to take a break, and in hour two, more John Smirak.
Of angel hair, ice cream castles in the air, and feathered canyons everywhere. I've looked at clouds that way.
Hey, folks. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. Now, we got to hit pause on John's Mirac because he's got stuff to do. He's got to feed the beagles and stuff. So I thought, let's hit pause. We'll be back with him for hour two. But, Albin, I wanted to say what we were talking about at the beginning of the hour before we get John on is that the phone number for CSI,
yes.
We were giving out the wrong number, and a lot of people complained and said, we can't give and we want to give, whatever. Now, as I mentioned at the beginning of the hour, CSI was so pleased with what we were able to do. We raised about $250,000, praise God,
yeah.
to free slaves in Sudan, okay? But they wanted us to kind of re-up and to continue for the month of January. So we're doing a new campaign. I mean, it's a continuation of the old campaign, but those of you who gave will get, you know, the appropriate gifts and thank yous and stuff. But anybody who gives... starting now,
yes.
okay, for the rest of this month, you're entered into a new drawing,
yes.
a grand prize drawing where you get signed books from Albin and from me and from some of our guests on the program. Grand prize also to come and visit us in the studio, which is really fun if you're ever in New York. And by the way, you know, people say, like, these tickets are non-transferable.
Right.
Well, these tickets are transferable.
Yes, please.
If you know somebody who lives in the New York area or know somebody who's going to New York, you can say, you know what? I won this gift. It was a grand prize drawing. I only gave $20 to CSI, but I won because whatever you give, they put it in a pot. And we won the grand prize. And how would you and your family of five, you can go and visit the Eric Metaxas Show. So some really cool opportunities. Now, the phone number, everybody knows you can go to MetaxasTalk.com, and we want everybody to participate. And unfortunately, that means you. So those of you who gave from the bottom of our hearts, I just have no words to say how grateful I am for what you are doing and what you've done. But for those of you who haven't yet given, the opportunity still exists. We didn't anticipate this, frankly. I didn't know that that we were going to do this in January. That's a fact. But we are doing it. So today, which is the 6th of January, we begin again. And the phone number is 888, not 800, 888-253-3522. 888-253-3522. Once again, 888-253-3522. Before we go back to John Smirak, I just want to remind everybody how important it is for us to participate in these kinds of things. And the reason I always say to people, it costs $250 to free a slave, right? Now, I've broken that down at other times. But the point is, many people can't give that amount. A lot of people did give that amount, but many people can't give that amount. But everybody can give something. So this is between you and your conscience, between you and God, what you give. But I just want to say, we want everybody to give. We don't care if you give $5 or $20 or whatever you give. We don't. We want everybody just to have that good feeling of, I did something really beautiful because somebody gave me the opportunity. And when I say it's an opportunity, trust me, these opportunities are rare. There's a lot of problems in the world, and there's very little a lot of us can do about it. Yeah. This is one of these satanic problems in the world. So it's so evil that you can't even think about it. And we get to do something about
it. You know, you might have gotten Christmas money, that sort of thing. It'd be great to take some of that and, you know, use it here.
I mean, to use it for God's purposes. I don't know what else to say. CSI is about as good as it gets. This is not, you're not giving to some, you know, Clinton Foundation that's going to help the Haiti victims. This is a real, when you give them money, it goes to the victims. So I just want to say the number again, 888-253-3522, 888-253-3522, 888-253-3522. We'll be back in hour two with lots more of John Zamirak. Don't go away.
It's a living thing. It's a terrible thing to lose. It's a gift.